This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
What do you say we go away and leave this all behind? Go to some exotic land and see what we can find. Forget the things that burden us. Run barefoot in the sand and eat fresh fruit right off the trees and do nothing we have planned. What would it take to make our break and go away for good? And leave the rat race to the rats and do nothing that we should. Swim in ocean water blue and eat the food it gives. Do nothing we're supposed to do except eat and sleep and live.
Good morning. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. This is KBOO in Portland. I am Lynn, and guess who I'm here with?
And good morning, I'm Ani.
And besides our usual wonderful Chumbawamba intro, was from our friend Paul Bullock of Lubbock, Texas, but he is in Bucerias, and that's sort of what we've all been doing since when we've been gone. And
a couple weeks of good living.
Yeah. And just wanted to let you know. And give Paul a little heads up and hi. This morning, however, and also we are here with our guest who was just in Puerto Vallarta also, and we missed him somehow, I don't know how, but is Dexter Gauntlet. He is Program and Resource Development Manager for Green Empowerment. And he started with them 2005. He's been with Service and Learning. He's now a member of the board. Recently served as a Rus Fellow in the Philippines, where he worked alongside local partners to expand our presence in Asia. That is the Green Empowerment present in Asia through proposal writing, donor cultivation, and new program development. He is a clean tech industry analyst and consultant. And one of my favorite things about him is that you minored in Ultimate Frisbee at the University of California. That is very nice. Welcome, Dexter. We are here this morning to help promote an event called Green Empowerment. And I'll let Dexter do a little talking about that.
Let's start out with what is Green Empowerment?
That's what I figured he'd tell us.
Sure. So our organization, Green Empowerment, is an international non-governmental organization. And that means we're basically a nonprofit, and we work overseas, but we're based here in Portland. And our mission is to work with local organizations, local communities, to implement community-based renewable energy and water projects and watershed protection projects in remote villages. So we've been around for about 15 years, and friends at KBOO here have helped us over the years in telling the story of our organization. And thanks for having me here today.
You are extremely welcome. So this event, what is the event going to be
about? Sure. So the event is called Passport to Empowerment, and it's on June 1st, and it's going to bring together 250 of the international sustainable development community from here in Portland for a night of, I like to say, we're going to bring the movers and shakers of Portland to the party and then have them move and shake it on the dance floor as a benefit party for our projects overseas.
All right. And what? It's June 1st. Say that again.
Yeah, it's June 1st, and it's in St. John's at this amazing event space called The Colony. It just opened up, and it has a great ballroom and a number of other different rooms. And there's two levels of tickets, so anyone can come. But part of it, the whole idea is to have country-themed rooms that represent our work in the countries where we work. So we work in Latin America and Southeast Asia, and we're going to have food and cocktails that are inspired from those countries served in each of those rooms. And so as guests go through the different rooms, they'll have these little samplings of food and drink and then learn about our work. So in Peru, Kenya, Philippines, Thailand, Nicaragua.
It sounds very like an entertaining and purposeful evening.
Yeah, it's a what they call it now, a party with a purpose type concept. And so we're really bringing together people who work in clean energy, sustainable development, international affairs, and we're really targeting the young professional crew. And because there's so much momentum around international development and clean energy, and green empowerment is really at the nexus of those two really, you know, interesting, for lack of a better word, sexy fields. And so we're really trying to, we have a live salsa band and the food and a lot of activities. So it'll be a great opportunity for everyone to get together June 1st.
And where can people get more information about that?
Sure. Our website is greenempowerment.org. And you can also check out the event on Facebook at facebook.com/greenempowerment. And the event is called Passport to Empowerment, June 1st.
Let's go back and again look at when you talk about your projects are in Nicaragua and Thailand and the Philippines, and what are your projects in? Let's unpack that a little bit.
Sure.
What are you doing in those countries?
Yeah. So when I say renewable energy projects, I'm referring to things solar. So solar PV. So that we mostly have solar for community buildings, solar water pumping, irrigation systems. And we have other technologies like micro hydro, which is the same concept as a large hydroelectric dam, except it's kind of much, 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 much less destructive, and it's works in rivers. And so we also do projects like small wind and biogas digesters, and a lot of water filtration projects and water delivery projects, rainforest protection, that kind of thing.
Well, how do they do rainforest protection? I know you're not the technical guy. We talked about that already. Yeah. But is that hard with the government or with the sort of economic pressures and things that have already been instilled in the country? Is that hard to work around that?
Yeah, absolutely. So a little bit more about our model that helps answer this question is that our kind of niche, of course, renewable energy in order to carry out these projects. But also our mission is really, as much as it is to implement projects, it's really to build capacity in local organizations, mm-hmm. In all of these countries so that they can be the leaders and really dictate how these activities should be implemented. And so we build capacity in three main ways, and I'll get to the answer to the question here. So we build capacity through help with technical stuff. So if they may have experience in solar or wind but want to learn more about micro hydro, or they may be strong in rainforest preservation but they want to start integrating renewable energy projects into the communities who are living in these kind of protected areas. So that's one way. The other way we do it is through fundraising. And so we jointly write proposals to foundations and throw on events like the Passport to Empowerment Party in order to raise funds for these projects. And the third way we do it is through we build capacity through management support and reporting. Because in like all things, international development, you have to be very effective in telling your donors and people who have given you money, have a lot of transparency and accountability. And when you're a local organization and English is your second, third, or fourth or fifth language, reporting requirements can be pretty difficult to do. And so we help them navigate that and help them make sure that they're being transparent as well. So back to your point, for a lot of communities, when they're subsistence communities, they don't really look at the rainforest as, oh, this amazing area that we have to protect. That's their livelihood, right? And so you have to create incentives for them and alternative options so that they don't deforest the area around them. right? And so one way,
because mahogany is worth a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, they may not have the same, you know, view of the sorry state of affairs of globally of our rainforest, you know, have. And so instead for them, how it's kind of this weird dynamic where you have a lot of pressure on these people who are living on less than a dollar or $2 a day, have these kind of Westerners with their value system that say, hey, look, no, don't touch that rainforest that you're living in.
We want our refrigerators, but you don't get the rainforest, right?
Exactly right. So, you know, we're very mindful of that. And so it's really important to create the incentives. And one thing you can do is say, here's an alternative, right? So what are they actually using the wood and trees for, right? It's cooking. And, you know, hopefully if they need to, boiling water, right? So that the it purifies the water. Mm-hmm. And if you can provide a non-invasive source of electricity, so such as solar panels, let's say, and say, okay, well, that should reduce the amount of wood you need to cut down in order to boil your water, cook your meals and that kind of thing or whatever, then hopefully that, and you, along with that is the concept of, look, the more you take care of the watershed that you live in, the more productive it will be, both from generating food, but also more importantly, actually, is the water sources. So you, if you deforest an area around a river or a stream or whatever, then that increases the amount of erosion and it reduces the amount of water available for not only drinking, but also for irrigation, et cetera.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, well, now, it's not just the people that live around there that are deforesting it. Corporations are coming in, cutting the trees down, or trying to make the rainforest into a place where cows can go so McDonald's can have beef burgers. So how does that work with what you're doing?
Yeah, that's a really, you know, pervasive trend, and it's it can be pretty it's easy to get cynical and very pessimistic on all that. We don't do a lot of kind of proactive rainforest advocacy. That's just not our mission. Our mission is really mm-hmm. to get the projects done, but it's definitely a trend that we're seeing.
That trend of corporate sort of buyouts of and deforestation efforts. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so let's again talk about the projects and your partnerships. Who's deciding what's needed in these communities? Is that driven by you or is that driven by the communities themselves?
Yeah, great question. And so that again speaks to our model of really working with local NGOs. And we're so lucky. My favorite part of the work is that we have found the most amazing, technically skilled, savvy, local professionals and engineers and organizational leaders in Latin America and Southeast Asia. We have this amazing network of these very empowered, I mean, that's why we're called Green Empowerment, right? We find the people who are doing great things and just need a little bit of help to navigate the system in order to be more effective. Mm-hmm. So the perfect example I like to talk about, and actually I think Jaime Munoz is coming here next week. He's the director of ASO Phoenix. And that's our local partner in Nicaragua. And he is just was a guy, a technician, who had skills in solar and wanted to get projects off the ground. And while we were down in Nicaragua, actually working with our other partner there, in the who was familiar with Ben Linder, we came across Jaime. And he, you know, started off this partnership, basically, and got our first project off the ground, which is a solar water pumping project. And before it was just him, maybe one other guy, and us, right? Jaime said, oh, there's this whole group of communities in Buaco in northern central Nicaragua that need water. It is rural. There's the way off the map, never going to be electrified, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so I said, okay, well, what's it going to take? And so he would go for, it's about an 8-hour drive out there. Hardly any roads. And he said, look, this is what we need. He talked for the community. You really have to get the community support. A lot of communities are used to having groups kind of come in and promise something and then leave. But when if it's a local organization or like local group like Jaime, then he will is kind of more credible in a lot of ways. And so, you know, we get one project off the ground together, it gains momentum, and now he's up to the point over, I think we've been working together for 6, 7, 8 years almost. We've done, I think, 7 or 8 solar water pump projects together. He has a staff of 10 people, including one green empowerment person who's down there with him all the time, Caitlin Peak, who's a phenomenal resource. She was a PSU student. She's doing amazing work.
Excellent. You are listening. I want to give a little idea here to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn, and there's Ani.
I'm Ani, and this morning our guest is Dexter Gauntlet, Program and Development Manager for Green Empowerment. And we welcome your call.
Your calls.
Calls would be all right, too.
The number here is 503-231-8187. You can also contact us at Positively Revolting at Facebook, or positivelyrevolting@gmail.com would also work if you are and don't feel like talking to anyone yet. But please give us a call, 503-231-8187, if you have questions or comments for our guest Dexter Gauntlet this morning.
So, inspirationally, Ben Linder, one of Portland's, I think one of our inspirational historical figures of late, was a part of inspiring what Green Empowerment's beginnings. Can you talk a little bit about that tie-in?
Sure. So, Benjamin Linder was an engineer. Mechanical engineer, I believe, from University of Washington, but his family was here in Portland. And after graduating, he went to work in Nicaragua during the Nicaraguan Civil War. And he has been there, I think, for a couple of years when he was working on a micro-hydro project in a rural village in Nicaragua. And he was killed by the U.S.-backed Contras at the time. And he... because of his strong ties to Portland and his commitment to working in rural areas and empowering communities out there, the founder of Green Empowerment, Michael Royce, was who's a great, great guy and a real big inspiration to me personally. He wanted to continue the legacy of Ben Linder by serving his memories, continuing the type of work that he was doing. And so that was really the genesis of Green Empowerment. And he worked as an unpaid executive director for 10 years and kind of, brought in an amazing support network that has really helped us over the years. And now here we are today and working in 10 countries and, really scaling up our impact.
What do you think the most pressing needs are facing rural areas in developing nations?
So, it's a very, the needs are endless in some respects, I guess if you have a Western perspective, but I would definitely say water is the most pressing issue. And what is interesting is that it's not really just about access, improving access to water. It's actually the quality of water and the sanitation and hygiene practices around it, right? So if you're delivering, if you increase access to dirty water, then you're not really doing anyone any favors, right?
Not necessarily, no.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's really about, what's the latrine situation? What's the hand washing situation? And so that, and everything is kind of linked to that, right? So if you are sick from dysentery or cholera or, E. coli or whatever it is, then you're not going to be able to go to school. You're not going to be able to work because, you're sick. And so if you can improve, it's the number one way to improve health. And, everyone kind of understands that. So a lot of our projects are not only increasing access to potable water through renewable energy like solar water pumps, ram pumps, etc., but also through education around sanitation and hygiene.
And water filtration is just a whole worldwide. I mean, we have our issues with it here in Portland as well. It's a huge. It's always so funny to me because we have so much water on this planet, but not all of it is drinkable at all.
That's right. That's right. And actually, one of the major impacts we're seeing of climate change is, more variability in rainfall patterns. And so, And we're trying as an organization to say, to really think about how we can help communities adapt to the impacts of climate change. And, it's a very, very, obviously very difficult to predict exactly how it will impact all these communities, but there are some pretty significant trends that, what you want to do, one of the major things that we can do is to help to manage supply of water, right? And so, we lived in the Philippines with my family for most of 2011, trying to scale up water projects there. We were working in southern Philippines, which is a kind of a conflict-affected area, and for a long time. And what we're doing is we have a big project now to do provide water to 40 communities over the next 3 years, and it will increase not only access to potable water, but the supply of it as well. Big holding tanks, pipe systems that are fed by gravity to individual homes.
I want to ask, have you heard recently the Nestle, the chairperson from Nestle, Peter Brabeck, Lamothe, he recently said that he doesn't feel like the public has a right to access water. That's not a human right. Have you heard about that?
No.
Yeah, check that out. Things that just spine-tingling revelations. Because I think obviously, I mean, if access to water isn't a human right, what is?
That's right. No, absolutely.
Right on. Okay, so we have on the line with us joining us, Lynn. Lynn on the line. Good morning, Lynn. You're on the air.
Oh, hey. Hi, Ani and Lynn.
Good morning.
This is Lynn.
I'm on the air. Oh, okay.
Hey, I know. It's just so wonderful that you're interviewing people from Green Empowerment. And I was wondering if he could share a little bit of the information about the work that they have done in Burma and Thailand, which I think is really interesting, and it's just great that you're interviewing them. I was actually the first development director and went to work 9/11 for Green Empowerment. So give my regards to Michael Dexter, and welcome to KBOO.
Thanks, Lynn. Sure. That's a really, really interesting project. It is so, Thailand, the border region between Thailand and Burma is a really kind of a hot spot for kind of development activities, because Burma's been such a black hole in a lot of ways, and there's a lot of conflict and migration issues, and people who are trying to come across the Burmese border for resources, right? There's a lot of hundreds of thousands of Burmese refugees on the Thai side of the border. And so through the work of a number of people, what was brought to our attention was the need for increased electricity and light by Burmese communities who would come to the Thai side of the border and get supplies and then go back, right? But what they didn't have out in the jungle, because they're constantly kind of on the move, is that they would have we would train the Burmese doctors to come on the Thai side of the border, and we would train them how to install a small solar panel system, right? And then they would bring it back with them to the Burma side of the border, and go wherever they wanted to go, and then have electricity to do things like vaccine refrigeration, minor surgeries, light at night for doing operations. Mm-hmm. And so we've done, I think, about 40 of these kind of mobile health clinics, we call them, over the last 10 years. And I think we've served about almost 200,000 people are served by those mobile health clinics over the last 10 years or so.
Wow, that's exciting. That's intrigue.
Yeah, it is. It's really interesting out there.
And we have Harvey on the line. Good morning, Harvey. You're on the air.
Hi, Lynn, Omni, and Dexter. And I really appreciate this program, and you're right. Like, water is the problem, especially in third world areas where even the groundwater might be poisoned. So I have an idea. I'd like to wonder if Dexter's heard about it or seen it. And I call it the solar-powered portable water maker. And what it is it's like a box, like the size of an orange crate or slightly larger, covered with flexible solar panels. And even the sides could come up like leaves on a table to create extra solar panels and space. And inside the box is thermoelectric devices, which are solid-state devices, and they precipitate water out of the air thermoelectric devices pump heat from one side to the other.
Sure.
And and then, of course, you can have a small fan pulling the air through the box and then a filter, some sort of membrane filter to filter the water. But this would be a portable water maker. You put it down in the sunlight and come back at the end of the day, you got a gallon or two of water. And
yeah.
So I think that that's one way to go. And I just want to, you know, I just want to thank you for all your work there. It's really important what you're doing. And if you go to Google and put it in the word atmospheric water generation,
sure,
there's all that information there. So that's just wondering if you heard or use anything like that.
Yeah, I don't know that specific design, but you know, solar water purification is a very fairly common technology. And what's really interesting, kind of the broader point that you're bringing up, is that there's so much interest in improving the quality of life for communities in rural villages, and renewable energy is perfectly applicable because it's decentralized, it's distributed, it's small scale, it's appropriate technology. It's not replicating the large centralized model that a lot of Western developed countries have followed, but we're trying to really show that there's an alternative path, that distributed generation, on-site generation, communities can be self-sufficient. And what's interesting is that in the last green empowerment in 1997, when it was really founded, was kind of ahead of the curve in terms of trying to incorporate these distributed technologies, renewable energy technologies, into rural villages. But now the curve is really caught up in a lot of ways. Solar, microhydro, small wind, these kind of things are really pretty common. And what we're seeing is more of an interesting dynamic of the last 5 years, where there are actually a lot of small businesses that make applications like Harvey just described. And it's never going to be just one solution for any community. And that's a big part of development, right? Appropriate technology means it's appropriate in size, it's appropriate, it knows who its end users are, and that it's low cost and it's easy to fix. The more sophisticated a system is, then the more likely it could break, and the harder it would be for locals to be able to fix it. And so there's a lot of activity. There's individual solar home systems that people can get with microcredit. That's a $20 system that they can pay back over time. But our mission is to really have community-based projects. It's just been our ethos. It's how we've been working, where we won't go and have communities install on individual home systems necessarily, right? We care about larger solar water pumping that can benefit an entire community, because there's a lot of community organizing that needs to happen around it as well.
And I really like that idea of, I think that time has come here as well to get away from the enormous power companies. And even with things like power outages and things like that, it works a lot better if it's very local, if you have your solar panels and some batteries, or if it's a local community thing.
Absolutely. And there's some really, again, there's a lot of innovation happening here in the U.S. With my other hat on, with my clean tech market research analyst hat on, distributed generation is just booming right now. And the cost of solar has come down dramatically. There's a lot of interesting financing models that are out there that can let you have solar on your roof for little to no money down, and you basically start paying. You don't own the system. You just buy the electricity that comes from it, and the company owns the solar system. So, and you often pay equal to or less than your utility rate, your retail rate, and then you lock that price in over 20 years. And so that kind of business model is really causing a major explosion in distributed solar in the U.S.
Hmm. So overall, making things more accessible, that are actually better for, the climate, better for the environment, better for communities. That's sort of what the theme I'm seeing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And what's, what we were talking about before is that there's this, the wave is caught up. We're inundated with people who want to get involved. And, this whole Passport to Empowerment party on June 1st is really to bring together a lot of these people who either have been involved or want to get involved. We have a long history that really is similar to the Ben Linder ethos of working with young professionals who have a certain skill and want to participate, but maybe don't know how to plug in, right? And so we've led most recently a trip of renewable energy professionals, went down to Nicaragua on a trip to our solar water pumping project, and a lot of those folks will be at the party on June 1st. So we do trips with Portland State University once or twice a year. We've probably done trips with about 10 different universities over the last 6 years. We do renewable energy technical trainings as well. So this is like 2 to 3 day workshops. We did the last one at Imagine Energy, which is a great organization here in town. So yeah, our real mission is to also, you know, is to incorporate in the same legacy of Ben Linder, in the memory of him, to bring people from the community to what kind of resources they can provide.
Excellent. And I just want to remind folks that you're listening to KBOO in Portland. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio. I'm Lynn. I'm here with Ani. And you can give us a call if you have questions for Dexter Gauntlet of Green Empowerment. The phone number here is 503-231-8187. Don't forget to like us on Facebook. It's a very good thing to do. And we can continue the discussion on Facebook as well. That's one of the fun things about social media. So they say. Anyway.
Well, and speaking of continuing the discussion, again, where can people continue to find out more information about the kind of projects that you're involved with?
Great. Yeah, it's our website is greenempowerment.org, and that's greenempowerment.org. And the same information for the party that we're talking about, the benefit fundraiser, Passport to Empowerment, is on our website, or you can go to facebook.com/greenempowerment.
Excellent. So you've been you've lived in many places. Tajikistan. I always think of Herman Cain when I think of that, but I can't. That's another story. Southeast Asia. Have you been in Southeast Asia?
Yeah.
Sri Lanka. What was your favorite place?
It's hard.
I know that's a good question.
Yeah, it's a really good question. There's no one favorite place. Everything was different for different reasons, and we were traveling at different points of our lives. I've been very fortunate. My wife, Amber, and I have been able to do most of this traveling together. And so, yeah, we were working with other organizations in Tajikistan right after college, and that was working on Tajikistan's just north of Afghanistan. It's kind of one of the most probably forgotten countries on the planet. And we were, because it's so isolated, the project there was actually connecting schools, 20 schools in Tajikistan to 20 schools in the U.S. Via the internet.
Oh, really? So
providing radio wave internet connection. It's pretty interesting at its time. And that's right at the end of the Himalayas, so it's a really beautiful place, former Soviet republic, dirt poor, the poorest of the 5 post-Soviet republics in Central Asia there. But also very beautiful, large Soviet infrastructure, gray statues, cement buildings everywhere. There are some cars, but not very
many. Those like ex-Soviet statues.
Exactly. That was interesting. And then the tsunami hit in 2005, and so they transferred us to Sri Lanka. And that was really intense because it was, one major disaster wiped out 150,000, 200,000 people. And there is a small island. I'd been just wrapped up 25 years of civil war. So, and you have, $6 billion of aid that has been kind of pumped into that country. So it's just a really interesting dynamic there. Philippines was with my family. I have a 4-year-old Greta and a 4-year-old daughter Greta, and now a young son Cyrus. So having a child there was really difficult, but also lets you get into other places and have different conversations with different people there.
It does.
Yeah.
It's a
great job.
Well, I think what I'm going to do is let's go in an announcement. Oh, many things. There's paper everywhere. Coming up on KBOO this morning at 9, Joe joined Bill, Arlene, and Marvin of Northwest Vets for Peace as they play anti-war songs from the Vietnam era, as well as some songs of World War I and the present day perpetual wars. At 10, Air Cascadia is off. We'll hear Flashpoints, which features an update on last week's genocide conviction of former Guatemalan strongman General Rios Montt. Also, more excerpts from the film Who Bombed Judy Berry. And Judy Berry Day is coming up May 24th. Remember that. At 11, Portland-born photography-based artist Carrie Mee Weems talks about 3 decades of photography and video. Her exhibit at the Portland Art Museum, Weems' works, promotes justice as it relates to race, gender, and class issues. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, You can become one very, very easily by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And while you're at the kboo.fm website, please check out the all the programming that we have. We have some amazing, varied, and just very rich programming. I think that you will enjoy your trip there very much.
Why, yes.
Why, yes.
And at the moment, and as you were saying earlier, do give us a call at 503-231-8187. Participate in your community radio station. Participate in talk radio this morning. What questions do you have about development and partnering with rural communities around the world? Usually we here at Positively Revolting tend to look locally, tend to look in our own backyards. But, you know, we were feeling a little more globally inspired after doing some traveling over the last little while. And I think it's, you know, an interesting dynamic that here locally there is an organization that is looking globally to see what effect we can have in the world, in actually thing that I have been impressed with is the partnership with the local communities, is taking direction from listening to people about what their own needs are instead of coming in with a cookie cutter model and telling community what their needs are, which I think would be a far less successful model, right? And one that's, you know, that would be really inappropriate. So partnering and I guess finding those people that can really pull that consensus together, that can and really identify the obstacles so that you can also help deal with that in some way. Yeah. What are some of the obstacles that you are dealing with?
Sure. So, you know, first of all, I guess it may be good to start. In Portland's a really, I call it kind of the little hub for international development 2.0, I like to say, where you have this kind of, you know, social media is about bringing kind of, you know, peer-to-peer lending is happening, the social media stuff. It's about like everyone's accessible all the time, right? So there's a lot of great organizations here, and there's a lot of kind of creative thinking around this. And, you know, we host a monthly kind of a thing, something called Development Drinks, which is just a way for people in the industry to kind of talk about the work that they're doing. It's once a month. You can sign up for it, Development Drinks. You should go to our website for it, greenempowerment.org. But the common themes that keep coming up, of course, are, you know, one, kind of funding, right? There's always difficult to, I mean, there's a million good causes, and there's a lot of work that needs to be done. So that's number one. Number two, it's just the amount of planning and timeline it takes to do something right. It's always a bit of a trade-off. And this is a really interesting dynamic, so, where the funding world has changed pretty dramatically. The funders have become much more instructive, I guess, of what they're looking for, right? Where I think where most people think about our type of work, they think about, oh, church groups who go overseas and just kind of lazily, not lazily, but just haphazardly maybe put something together and, you know, all that. But people don't realize there's a huge industry around international development. Mercy Corps is one of the premier, I mean, they are one of the best in terms of being effective, efficient, doing things right. I mean, they're also a couple hundred million dollars a year, right? Mm-hmm. And they get that way because the donors like to latch on to people who do great work and say, okay, you've done this in 5 villages, now do it in 50, now do it in 500. Everything is about scale now. And the trade-off inherent in scaling is eventually going to be quality, control, all these kind of things. It's not to say you can't be these problems can't be mitigated, but it becomes a greater challenge to take the same level of time and approach to, you know, 5 communities as you would with 50, right? And Green Empowerment's you know, kind of way we separate ourselves is that we think small is beautiful, and for that reason, we will always trade hitting major scale for doing things right. And there's a lot of power in that from our perspective. That said, we think we can be disproportionately effective, and we are disproportionately effective. Our staff in Portland is only 6 people. But because we have this model where we are really building capacity in local NGOs, we see ourselves as actually maybe 50 people because we have partners in 10 countries. And as a result, we can be, you know, yes, we're doing a few projects here, a few projects there. We're scaling up in the Philippines. We're going to be doing 40 over the next 3 years. But, you know, these projects start to really add up. And we're growing at a pace that we're comfortable with, and we can continue to focus on quality, and we continue to make sure we're doing things right. So that's really one of the biggest challenges, I would say, development faces, because it's always chasing the money, chasing money, chasing money. But then you're like, okay, we have all this money, but it's ruining our organization. It's ruining our mission, and we're never going to make that trade-off. So it's something that we're very mindful of as an organization, and our board is really, you know, making clear to us as well.
So what you're saying, it sounds like it ends up being more people in the places where things are happening than in your organization in Portland.
Yeah, that's right. And what's, again, what's beautiful about that is that when you have the local organizations who, you know, can show they have a track record of, you know, it's one thing to do one or two projects, but if you can say, I've done 5, 10, 15, 20 projects, all of a sudden, and you're a local organization, you are well positioned to receive continued funding from donors.
Well, or, I mean, an example of the wrong way, not the wrong way, I won't say exactly, but people that are suspect, like the Red Cross, seems very top-heavy.
Yeah.
And a lot of organizations that rely on donations seem very top-heavy.
Uh-huh.
And that it's nice to, it seems like it's more, it ends up being more successful even to not be that way.
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's this... Again, it kind of goes back to that. It's that same dynamic. Not only do you want to do more projects, but you know, more money equals better, right? It doesn't always necessarily. It gives you agency and opportunity to improve and do more. But the same breath, it comes with a lot of administrative requirements. And that's another major trend, is that as you get larger grants, the reporting requirements are insane. I mean, we have someone, our program director, Emily Green, who is phenomenal at doing this work. I mean, she has an eye to attention to detail that I don't have, and she can get through these huge reporting requirements, these quarterly reports, monthly reports. And so it's really, really those are the type of things that can make or break an organization. And it really speaks to the point. It's not just people going out there and trying to do good. It's a professional field. It's an industry that you have to be good at.
One wouldn't have ever thought that.
I know.
I know, and people don't think that when they're donating money.
That's right. That's right.
I want to pull back again, though, and look at the actual projects, like in Peru. And really looking at what the needs are. You know, when it seems kind of abstract. We're sitting in Portland. What are we really talking about? What are the needs of rural communities? You know, there's a huge percentage of households in Peru that actually don't have access to electricity. You know, talking about having access to latrines and, you know, that kind of sanitary condition. Can we talk and sort of, again, look scaling back at the work you actually do beyond the funding of it?
Sure, sure. So Peru is a great place to, you know, talk about it. And we, our partner there is a group formerly called Intermediate Technology Development Group, which has changed the name to Soluciones Practicas, practical action, practical solutions. Mm-hmm. And they are probably the best appropriate technology development organization in the world. They are a federation, really. They have, I think, 5 or 6 different offices around the world, and all have probably been working at appropriate technology solutions, so small-scale renewable energy and water systems, for 25 years. The whole concept of small is beautiful, that's a term, you know, that's in our vernacular now. It comes from this book, Small is Beautiful, by E.F. Schumacher in the 70s. And so this whole concept was actually brought to life through this organization, who's been implementing projects. So in Peru, we've been doing everything from small wind, solar for community centers, solar home systems, water projects. It's also really interesting because so our executive director, Anna Garwood, who has been the kind of driver of green empowerment from a programmatic standpoint for the last 10 years. I know, a phenomenal woman. She lived in Peru, worked closely with this organization to try to help it scale up as well. So it's about going from, you know, this is again kind of the role that green empowerment plays, is that they're looking at, you know, a couple villages here, a couple villages there. But then, you know, when Anna goes down there, it's like, how can we look at, you know, maybe what a plan would look like for an entire district, right? And so working with the local government to integrate these options into their planning, right? Because it's, again, really, it's the local government, if they start, so far the entire field is that someone's been coming to them, World Bank or Inter-American Development Bank, saying, look, if you want to electrify villages, you need to build this giantly destructive hydroelectric dam.
You
just have to. That's just the way it goes, right? But if someone could, show and prove, an organization like, Soluciones Practicas, that if they can prove that distributed small-scale options exist at a fraction of the cost and have all these other kind of great socioeconomic and social benefits, then that's lasting change, right? So if you can convince the local government and the local funders that that option exists, you can be disproportionately effective. So what we've done in Peru is now, we're scaling up in terms of district planning, large scale projects, and we're adding this. We are increasingly see ourselves as a facilitator of networks. So we've hosted for the last 2 years an international symposium on small wind. So we have a training center in Peru, or Soluciones Practicas does there, and we've brought 50 people from 30 different countries who are interested in renewable energy and are actually practitioners in the field of implementing these projects, but also a lot of local government people, a lot of donors and funders, so that they can see the success of these projects as a viable alternative. And so we can help disperse what I like to say is working laterally across international development to kind of green, in quotes here, or appropriate technology, evangelize, right, about this is how it works, these are the costs, and all the kind of lessons learned. And that's how you're going to see real change. And that's a role that we're well suited for because we have this great portfolio of projects and local partners that can speak to this in local languages, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I like how you use appropriate technology instead of green. Green has been a little co-opted, I think, when your toilet paper wrappers are talking about that. And you're going to Africa too.
Yeah, so that's another kind of launching pad. We do have one project in the Congo, which was a kind of a really interesting project that came together. It was in Democratic Republic of Congo at the center. That's kind of a history of it. The conflict between the Hutu and Tutsi in Rwanda kind of spilled over into the DRC and as part of a lot of issues there that have related to civil war and rape as a form of warfare. And for that reason, the author or the founder of Vagina Monologues found this.
She was just on KBOO yesterday.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Even there you go.
Yeah. Gensler, yes.
Yep. And so started this place called City of Joy, which is a place where women can come who have been victims of this, of war, and kind of, meet with other women like this and figure out how to kind of get on with their lives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, the center's been powered by this diesel generator for a long time because there's, the electric grid's unreliable or it doesn't exist. And so, and plus it's about, I think it's $8 to $10 per gallon for diesel, so very costly. So we took SunPower, a major solar company, donated solar panels, and we are, I think it was a 5 kW, a 5 kilowatt system was installed at this center, the City of Joy. And as a result, they can save money in diesel costs, diesel generator costs, displace the diesel pollution, and then have more reliable electricity throughout the day.
So when are you going to work in America?
Yeah. Oh, the second part of the – so that was our first foray into Africa. But now we're launching our current board chair, Dave Vantoff, is going to Kenya for a year starting this summer. And we've been working with Practical Action's other East Africa branch, so the same organization that we work with in Peru, they have a great branch out there in Kenya. And so that we're going to be kicking off a more concentrated series of projects there.
Busy, busy people.
Yeah.
So let's tell everybody again about the event that's going to be happening on June 1st. The Green Empowerment event.
Passport to Empowerment.
Passport
coming up on June 1st.
Yeah, June 1st, Passport to Empowerment. We are going to bring the Portland Renewable Energy, International Sustainable Development, Social Justice Movers and Shakers together for a major benefit party. and proceeds will go towards supporting green empowerment projects. You can go to greenempowerment.org to check out tickets. There's two ticket levels, so anyone can attend. We're going to have a live salsa band, Dina y Bamba, who are phenomenal. We're going to have country-themed rooms and cocktails. We're going to have dancing, DJ, and all sorts of games and stuff till late. So, yeah, come check it out. We're really targeting young professionals.
And if people just want to get in touch with Green Empowerment and see what they can do with that, is there...
Yeah.
You want to give that website?
Absolutely, yeah. Greenempowerment.org. That's greenempowerment.org. Or on Facebook, facebook.com/greenempowerment. And you can also get more information about the Passport to Empowerment Party there, which is June 1st.
And KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the Passport to Empowerment Party. It's, you know, really wonderful to be able to have a little time with you to unpack that and see exactly what that is supporting and the work that you're doing around the world with those local partnerships. I'm Ani. I'm here with Lynn. This morning, our guest is Dexter Gauntlett from Green Empowerment. I want to remind folks that Positively Revolting is likable on Facebook. You can go ahead and do that. You can also contact us by email anytime, and that's positivelyrevolting@gmail.com. 503-231-8187 is the number here in studio to join us as we are, well, within, you know, wrapping up here this morning talking about development going on around the world and sustainable development at that, using a technology in a way that is helpful in alleviating, you know, as you were saying, you know, it is providing, the work you're doing is providing more stable electricity, more stable water supplies, more access to these very basic resources, and displacing things like diesel pollution all at the same time. That seems kind of laudable.
To me.
Yeah.
I'm thinking.
Thanks.
I'm for it. You're very, very, very welcome. Any closing comments that you'd like to make? We got about 3 minutes.
Yeah.
So.
Just that, you know, we see ourselves as a very grassroots organization, not only in how we implement our projects, but also in how we incorporate people from the community here. And KBOO has been fantastic in helping us get the message out over the last 10 years, 15 years. And so we really appreciate, you know, your support on that. It really makes a big difference. But there's always ways to connect to our projects. And so everyone brings different skills and different resources, and we're always open to finding creative ways to do that. And so hopefully this party, Passport to Empowerment, will really help be an opportunity to really get all these people together in a room and find and meet with people who have actually already been to our project sites, who have fundraised. You know, Havara Shalom, a great group here in town, has fundraised for a project, a solar water pumping project in Nicaragua. Imagine Energy, who I've mentioned before, they are starting to fundraise for a project for one of our projects, either in Peru and Kenya. It's people like that who really kind of make the difference. And we try to, you know, facilitate all the good intentions that people have, because there's a right way to do something, and then there's not a right way to do something. So by working with us, you kind of make sure that, you know, you'll be, not only what you're doing is fulfilling, but also you can be effective.
Those two things are great together, aren't they?
Yeah.
They really are. And there's one little announcement I want to make that's a little off topic, but today is Friday, May 17th. It is the last day to safely mail your ballot in, because we have an election coming up, folks. If you haven't gotten your ballot in the mail, go check with the elections department. So this is the last day. Other than that, all registered voters should have received their ballot. So if you haven't, go to Multnomah County Elections or at 503-988-3720, or visit the elections office, which is where you're going to drop your ballot off if you don't mail it today, at 1040 Southeast Morrison Street in Portland. I know my sweetie likes to drop his ballot off. He just doesn't trust the mail for some reason.
I want to see it.
You want to see it in their hands.
I want to see it go in, yeah.
Okay, that's very good.
Okay, well, it's true. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you, Dexter, for joining us this morning. We are out of time, but we thank you, and we will be back again next week. Continue to be positively revolting, and keep on listening to KBOO throughout your day as we bring you all the latest information and news that's fit to listen to around Cascadia. See you later.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is 9 a.m. Stay tuned next for Veterans Voice. This morning, Bill, Arlene, and Marvin will be playing any war songs from the Vietnam era, as well as songs from World War II and today's perpetual wars, coming up next, right after these announcements.
This is Becky
and Sarah,
bringing you positive voices from the Portland community.
Portland State University students have several projects on which they will be working during this year's Village Building Convergence, including renovations to the fruit orchard at Southwest 12th and Montgomery, repairs on the Dialogue Dome, and a new project designed by Oren Steinbrook. Oren tells us more.
Originally, we thought it would be really neat to build a greenhouse out of using plastic bottles. We saw a few examples online and thought it would make a great VBC project. And then as we were talking about where we might site it, we realized that one of the places we wanted to put it was a green space that there are plans to build over in the relatively near future. So we thought, well, what if this greenhouse were mobile? What if it had wheels and you could just move it whenever you wanted? And then we got really excited about this mobile greenhouse idea. And now we're calling it, or I'm calling it, I should say, the seed cart.
This is Becky and Sarah for the Village Building Convergence and KBOO Radio.
KBOO Community Radio and Proper Villain Productions are co-sponsoring the 4th annual Portland's Prom, the prom you wish you'd had, where the punch will already be spiked and curfew extends past midnight. Portland's Prom will happen on Saturday, May 18th, at the Star Theater in Portland. Doors open at 8:30 p.m. This event is a benefit for Planned Parenthood. Participants must be 21 plus. Entertainment is provided by Just People, Excellent Gentlemen, Worth, and Dimitri. More information can be found online at kbu.fm on the right-hand side of the page under Community Events.
Welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 90.7 FM here in Portland, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Albany, Corvallis, Eugene, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. I'm Marvin, along with Mr. Bill.
Good morning.
And Arlie's not here today. She will be back, and we miss her. Wish she was here. I lost my cell phone, so if Arlene was calling me, I wasn't getting any messages. So I hope she she's listening, so she knows that I wasn't ignoring her. It's just that I don't have a cell phone. That was Ohio by Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. 43 years ago this month, on May 4th, 1970, the Ohio.